Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks when she saw what she had done, gave her father 41.
Exactly.
Like that.
This is the Lizzie Borden Podcast with your host, Richard Behrens, Episode 1. Welcome to the Lizzie Borden Podcast, a Nine Muses Books production. Episode 1, The Doggerel. Hi, this is Richard Behrens, and welcome to the first show of the Lizzie Borden Podcast. Over the next few episodes, we will be exploring many aspects of the life and trials of Lizzie Andrew Borden of Fall River, Massachusetts. In 1892, she was accused of killing her father and stepmother, but was subsequently acquitted. The murders are unsolved to this day, but for almost 125 years, the case has spawned countless novels, movies, television shows, true crime books, stage productions, an opera, a ballet, websites, blogs, community boards, and now a podcast. Lizzie Borden lives on in our cultural imagination. We are simply fascinated by her and the Gilded Age in which she lived. This podcast will explore that age, venturing into the history of Fall River and the Industrial Revolution in New England. We may very well explore other notorious women of the time, but we will always come back to Lizzie. Today you will hear my interview with Fall River historian and Lizzie Borden investigator Dr. Stephanie Corey and actress Jill Dalton, who wrote and starred in a one-woman stage play, Lizzie Borden Live. This interview was recorded in 2011, so Jill's play is no longer being performed. However, you could watch a scene from it on YouTube. A link to that video is on the website www.lizziebordenpodcast.com. More information about Lizzie Borden and the Lizzie Borden Girl Detective Mystery Series published by Nine Muses Books can be found at www.lizziebordengirldetective.com. And now, here is the Lizzie Borden Podcast, Episode 1, The Doggerel. Probably the best introduction to Lizzie Borden is the four-line rhyme that most people know without even being aware of where they learned it. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. This rhyme alone is not the best introduction to the Lizzie Borden story, but oddly enough, the best introduction would be in the explanation of how inaccurate it is. We choose to call this not the rhyme or the song, but the doggerel. Technically, doggerel is a bit of lyric without much literary value, paying little attention to art, usually treating it subject matter in some trivial fashion, caring little for whether it is even accurate. Often clever rhymes are favored over accuracy. For example, the use of 40 and 41 to describe the number of blows. Those numbers merely help the line scan better. Could you imagine how the song would sound if it were rewritten as follows? An unknown person took a hatchet, gave Lizzie Borden's stepmother 19 whacks. And then roughly about 90 minutes later, this same unknown person gave Lizzie Borden's father 10 blows. Sounds strange. You can't exactly jump rope to that, but it's far more accurate. Mr. Andrew Jackson Borden and his second wife, Abby Durfee Gray Borden, were murdered in their home on August 4th, 1892, in Fall River, Massachusetts, between 9:30 and 11 o'clock in the morning. Andrew's youngest daughter, Lizzie, was subsequently indicted for the murders, and in June of 1893, she was acquitted by the Superior Court in New Bedford. She lived a free woman for another few decades on the hill in her house Maplecroft on French Street, dying in 1927, and the identity of the killer was never discovered. There is evidence that Lizzie Borden heard the doggerel in her lifetime and was quite disturbed by it. In this podcast, we're going to explore the origins of this song and how it has been used in history and in the media. Hopefully along the way, you'll learn some basics about Lizzie Borden. First, we talk to Dr. Stephanie Corey of Pear Tree Press. Stephanie is also the editor of The Hatchet, a journal of murder, mystery, and Victorian history, and the author of the blog Mondo Lizzie, She's an active member of the Fall River community and a valuable contributor to Lizzie Borden studies. I chatted with her recently about this famous doggerel. All right, so we're talking about the doggerel.
Yes, we are.
Do you want to recite the doggerel so people could hear it?
Sure. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks, and when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. Now, there's something terribly, terribly wrong with that little rhyme, which is almost every word is incorrect. We know from some historical studies that the doggerel actually existed from sometime around 1893, which means it was spoken to Lizzie in her presence at some point. There are stories that people come and tell me proudly in some strange way about their great-grandfather or grandfather running after Lizzie actually saying it to her as she was walking up the street. It's believed that it was actually sung outside the courtroom in 1893 while she was on trial for her life. Somehow, although it doesn't scan properly, to the tune of Tararo Boomdie. I haven't been able to make it work in my head, but perhaps there's other versions of that music.
Well, the song Tararo Boomdie, according to some websites, was actually introduced in 1891, which would make it very sure it would have made it a popular song at the time of the murders and at the time of the trial.
And an easy thing for someone to remember because it's very short and upbeat.
Now, when you say that Lizzie in as early as 1893 may have actually heard the song, we generally, maybe because of the media, maybe because of movies that have been done, we generally think of a chorus of children singing this. Why do you think that we have that association of the song with a chorus of singing children?
I think because it had later and more currently still been a jump rope rhyme, that without it being attached to any particular kind of music, it works as a jump rope rhyme. And in fact, people that I know tell me that they used to jump rope to it. So I think that it became a kid's poem. It's easy to remember. It's catchy. And there's no way for us to know who actually originated it, a particular person. But it seems to be a sort of a child's look at murder. It's actually sort of funny in a way, probably meant to be ghoulishly childish, which kids would be into. So I think that's why it's connected to children.
Sort of like the Ring Around the Rosie doggerel being associated with children, but it's really about the Black Death.
Yes, and dying of the plague. Yes.
Right. Now, when you say that it may have been sung outside the courtroom during the trial, this would obviously be a chorus of adults.
Or children, or whomever. If people are out there passing the time, apparently from what I've learned, the crowds gathered outside the courthouse and not everyone was allowed in, and it was the seating was limited, and people would arrive and try to get a seat in the courthouse, and they would be 4 and 5 and 6 and 8 people deep on the outside of the building, not being able to get in. It was in the summer, so the trial was in June, so the windows would have been open, and perhaps they were trying to hear what was going on inside from outside. People hung around and milled around outside the courthouse. There was also a cow pasture nearby, apparently, at the time. And there's remarks by various journalists that the cows moving while the trial was going on. So was a sense that you could hear from the inside and the outside of the building.
Now, this is the courthouse in New Bedford, correct?
Yes, the Superior Courthouse in New Bedford.
And there's no trace of a cow pasture now?
No. They pave over everything around here, so no, it's a parking lot.
Okay. Now, at the time, Lizzie Borden was in the jail in Taunton, correct?
Well, she was in the jail in Taunton between her indictment and the trial. When the trial came, she was moved to New Bedford was in jail in New Bedford during the 12 to 13 days of the trial, and then released from there when she was acquitted. So she spent about 10 months, I guess, in Taunton waiting her trial.
Yeah. Is there any evidence whatsoever of Lizzie reacting to the song?
No, but as I said, a gentleman told me recently, quite proudly, that his father, as a child, was sort of screaming it at Lizzie as she was walking home up French Street, right, and yelling it at her as she moved. And he was very pleased with his story that he told me, and he smiled like, ha ha. And I looked at him and I said, well, that was cruel, absolutely cruel. And he said, well, you know, kids will be kids. And it adds to the stories of her being shunned within the culture of the city and with the society of the city, even while she was living here. You know, it's funny, she was so protected and represented and supported during the trial by so many people, organizations and people of note and reputation. And then once the trial was over, she was dropped like a hot potato. I guess not so much that they didn't believe her, but that she was now tainted. And I imagine anybody going through that kind of an experience and being accused of such a horrible deed would, in fact, be tainted by that experience. And so it wasn't something anybody wanted to associate with. It was unseemly, I suppose. And they moved on to other causes and sort of left her high and dry. And this includes her friends at church, and this includes those organizations that she belonged to and was a member of and was held positions with. She was sort of ostracized.
Now, I know that in the Elizabeth Montgomery movie that was aired on network television, that song was used, and in there it was sung by a chorus of children. Do you know of any other movie or play or opera or ballet or any thing in the media that has used that song?
I think every play that's out there has got it in there somewhere. Most recently, the Lizzie Borden rock musical in New York that is played off-Broadway at the Living Theater, hopefully soon to go to Broadway because it's so amazingly good. They use it in a fabulous way. They start off with the four characters in the play, which are Bridget, Alice Russell, Emma, and Lizzie, singing the song as four part, sort of getting yourself acute, you know, getting used to the story because the story is in the doggerel. And then at the end, Lizzie sings it herself, and it is an absolute triumphant "so there." And I've never heard it sung that way or spoken that way or used that way before, and it just sent chills up my spine. But the rock musical takes every single myth about the story that cannot be proven and runs with it, and it works so well. But that's where they're headed with it anyway, that this was her liberation. Right. By killing these people, it was her liberation. And so the song becomes an anthem for her, and it was the best use of it ever and absolutely spectacularly perfect. So I applaud them in their retooling and sort of framing that song to suit their purposes as a characterization of Lizzie.
At this point,
you want to talk about the wrongness of the doggerel, right?
Yeah, we're going to discuss now the misinformation.
Misinformation? How about the outright lies?
The wrongness of the doggerel? Now, at the time, well, let's discuss it. Let's go over it line by line. The first line, Lizzie Borden took an axe.
Okay, first of all, she was acquitted. So, gosh darn it all, it's not Lizzie Borden. It is somebody. Somebody took, and not an axe, a hatchet. There was no axe involved. So, an axe would have required much less attack, I guess. Blow would have done it.
What is the difference between an axe and a hatchet?
I believe the difference has to do with the length of the handle and the size of the cutting blade.
Which cutting blade is wider, the hatchet?
The axe is used for chopping wood and to breaking things open and to, you know, firemen. And axes are need to have a longer handle because they're cutting through very hard things like wood. So the further away the weight of the head is from your hand, the bigger the impact and the stronger the blow. A hatchet is a shorter handled implement with a smaller head on it, could be less weight. If it had as big a weight as an axe head on it, it would be unwieldy. It would be very difficult to actually use. It would sort of fall something instead of you being able to control it. I've actually gone to Home Depot and picked them up and felt them. And, you know, what's a hatchet and what's the difference between the different kinds of hatchets? And, because I wanted to know what it felt like in your hand and how heavy they really are. You know, how can someone wield one and kill someone repeatedly with so many blows and not sort of have their arm fall off out of, you know, sheer, you know, pain from the activity? So it would have to have been a smaller implement than an axe.
Well, also in the murder of Andrew Borden, the space that was available between the couch and the two doors behind the killer would have made an axe even more difficult to maneuver.
Well, I think if someone had killed Andrew with an axe, one blow would have split his head in two. That's my feeling, because that's what they're for splitting wood. It wasn't. It was his head was not broken in two.
Right.
And so it was a hatchet, and all the expert witnesses testified that it was a hatchet. What's interesting is the Abby's wound had gilt in it, which means the hatchet that was used on her was fairly new because it still had the gilting on the blade. But there was no gilt found in the wounds of Andrew, which could mean one of two things. The gilt had come off in Abby and there was nothing left, or it was a different hatchet that was used. So there is a possibility of there being two murder weapons. The second line is pretty bad too, because it's gave her mother 40 wax. Well, it wasn't her mother. It was her stepmother, as she so famously announced. And it certainly wasn't 40 wax. It was 19. So 40 becomes this humongo number that makes it sound so tremendously violent. Now, 19's pretty bad. I mean, I'm not going to say that 19 is, you know, light, but it was 19. And so since we don't know who it was, I would say that the second line would have to just mention the woman's name instead of her relationship to the person who did the murder. So gave Abby 19 wax.
Now, how do we know the number 19? Is that from the autopsy report?
Yes.
Okay, the autopsy report, which I'm actually looking at right now, on your website.
Yes.
The autopsy report itemizes up to 18.
Well, there's the extra flap wound that they discovered later in the back of the neck.
I see. So that may have been the first actual blow.
We don't know. We don't know which is the first or which is the last, but there is a sort of a lower upper back shoulder lower neck flap wound that is actually number 19. So there were 19 cuts. There were 18 to the head.
Right.
Now, and then the third line, when she saw what she had done, if it's a she or a he, and then the last line gave her father 41, not nearly. He was attacked 10 times with a hatchet. Again, since we don't know who did it and she was acquitted, we can't give him the father. I would just put his name in there. I came up with a little poem myself to sort of explain it. It's not that great, and the other one's much better to sing along with. But I came up with, some mean person took a hatchet, gave Abby 19 wax without a racket. Minutes after that, Andrew got 10 wax where he sat. It's not as good. It will never be as good. And no one can think up a better one, I promise, but it's more accurate.
Well, you have to test it out on a bunch of girls with a jump rope.
No, I think they'll go with the other one, because Lizzie Borden is fun to say. There's something poetic about her name. Lizzie Borden.
Oh, yeah. Since the Lizzie Borden doggerel was firmly ingrained in the public consciousness and is often the only source of information that most people have about her, it makes sense that almost any dramatic portrayal, be it film, theater, ballet, or opera, has to include some variation of the song. One of the more effective uses of it has been in the play Lizzie Borden Live, written and performed by Jill Dalton and directed by Jack McCullough, with music by Larry Hockman. You're listening to the music now, and you could see how Hockman has woven the melody of the doggerel, as we generally sing it, into a more sublime and beautiful classical motif. On stage, Lizzie, as played by Jill Dalton, is at her home in Maplecroft circa 1905 and gets a surprise visit from a group of children who, on a dare, ring her doorbell. I spoke with Jill in New York City about her use of the doggerel in the play and her choices while designing the production. All right, well, that was Lizzie Borden Took an Axe, the bit of doggerel sung as heard in the play Lizzie Borden Live. Jill, could you say something about the recording of that piece and how it's used in the play?
Sure. Well, in the beginning, the way it was recorded was my director, Jack, me, and Gail Stahlhuth, who was the artistic director of Eastland, where we first, you know, who commissioned the play and where we first did it. And we were in the recording studio having the music that Larry Hockman had written for the piece recorded. And then we realized we needed to do this Lizzie Borden thing. So I think it was the three of us, you know, did it like trying to be kids. And I used it for a very long time until a girlfriend of mine came to see the play probably about a year or so after I'd been using it. And she was another, she's also a playwright, and she said, Jill, I think you need to have children's voices because it sounds like you and a couple of other, you know, grown-ups. So at the time, we were doing the piece at 78th Street Theater Lab, and the guy who runs, who ran the place, he's no longer there, Eric Nightingale, and his wife, Ruth, and they have two boys. So I said to him, do you think that they would do this and he would record this for us? And he was like, sure. And I said, do you have any friends that could bring along? He was like, sure. So it was his two sons, and they had a little friend, I forgot her name, a little girl, and she was there. And so I had to teach it to them. They had never heard of it. They had never heard of Lizzie Borden. I guess that's a good thing. They were little. You know, you don't need to be, like, scaring them. So we recorded it, and I taught it to them, and I wrote it down in big letters so that, and I was conducting them as they were, you know, doing it. And then Eric was recording it, and then he kind of overlooped because the little boy was, I guess he was about three or four, so he couldn't quite keep up with the others, which I thought was really cute because, you know, it was really kids trying to do it. And it was very different than the way we did it. When we recorded it, you know, as the grown-ups, it was very taunting to her and very kind of angry. And this, I thought, was interesting because it's almost, the way I look at it now is it's kind of like a game that they like to play. Like they dare themselves to go up there and do it and ring the doorbell. Will she come out? And then they laugh. So, you know, it's like kind of this game that they play with her. And but tonight, or when, you know, when I do it in the show, I get pissed off because, hello, I finally have company, and now I've got these kids who are embarrassing me in front of my audience, for God's sake. So I have to get rid of them. I yell at them.
Yeah, this would have been Lizzie Borden in what year, 1905? Is that when the play
takes
place?
Yes, 1905. Yeah, that's when the play takes place.
And she's living in Maplecroft, and these children, yes, are neighborhood children from Fall River who are, as you said, either they're not necessarily teasing her, they're like been dared to go up to her house and sing this.
Right, exactly. Now the older boy, though, he was like 8 or 9, you know, so he probably knew. Maybe, you know, he could have been the instigator, right? He's the one who said, hey, let's go do this, that crazy lady lives up there.
That's true. Lizzie Borden did live, how many years did she live in Maplecroft after she moved into it?
Well, let's see. I think she lived, the first half of her life was before the murders, and the second half was after the murders, so I think it's like 32 years, because she died in 1927. Yeah, so I think it's like 32 or 33 years.
The tune itself was supposedly originally sung to the tune of Tarara Boumdie.
Oh, that's right.
Which I looked up as having been composed or at least first presented in vaudeville in 1891. Which, of course, is 1 year before the murders. So that song must have been in the air at the time. That's where the tune might have been picked up.
Okay, because it's like, Ty-ry-ry, boom-dee, Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, gave her father 41.
Exactly.
Like that?
Right. in regard to the inaccuracies that are abounding in the song, could you comment a little bit upon that and how Lizzie herself in your play reacts to that?
Oh yeah, Lizzie really gets angry because Lizzie has this thing about her mother and her stepmother.
Right.
because Lizzie's mother died when, you know, Lizzie was 2.5. And for me as an actor and as a writer, I just knew that because of that, because Lizzie didn't really know her mother, that she would idealize her into this like angelic creature goddess, that if only her mother were alive, everything would be perfect. And of course, we all know that's ridiculous. But, you know, in the doggerel, as you call it, I thought it was a nursery rhyme, doggerel, you know, Lizzie Borden took an axe. Well, it was a hatchet. And the difference between an axe and a hatchet is huge. An axe is really long and heavy and big. And a hatchet is much smaller, and it's much more wieldable by a smaller person. Gave her mother 40 whacks. It was her stepmother, and she received 19 blows. And when she saw what she was had done, gave her father 41, and he received 10. But I like the fact that it's so inaccurate and exaggerated, because, you know, the newspapers at that time, I've read a lot of the articles, and they're as bad as like the Post and the News here in New York. They just make crap up and put it in there, and people think because it's been printed, oh, it must be right. But it's not. There's so many things that I found that were just inaccuracies. And, you know, how would it be? Lizzie Borden took a hatchet, gave her stepmother 19 blows. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 10. It doesn't really...
Well, not only that, but the version that you just quoted crumbles into dust when you assume that she was innocent.
Well, exactly.
You have been listening to the Lizzie Borden Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Behrens. This podcast was written and produced by Nine Muses Books and engineered by Mason Amadeus. The theme music was composed and performed by Melora Krieger. The Lizzie Borden Podcast is sponsored by Nine Muses Books and the Lizzie Borden Girl Detective Mystery Series. More information can be found at www.lizziebordenpodcast.com and www.lizziebordengirldetective.com.